This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Ah, beer. One of the oldest beverages consumed by humankind. It dates back at least 6,000 years to the ancient Egyptians and Mesopotamians. As such, the taste, ingredients, and blend behind a good brew at any specific time tells us much about the lives of the men and women who lived in those times. Take 1838. The year Great Britain crowns Queen Victoria. Now, what might have filled the goblets that loyal subjects raised in her honor?
Probably mostly porter or stout, I would guess.
That is Ron Pattinson, beer historian and author of Porters and Mild, among other books. He's speaking to us today from Amsterdam because Pattinson advised the Pretty Things Brewery of Somerville on a recent beer and history experiment. And the owner of Pretty Things joins us as well, Dan Paquette. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you start, Dan, by telling me a little bit about the Once Upon a Time series of beers that takes us back in time.
I used to be a brewer in the north of England and would travel to Amsterdam, occasionally in Belgium, and I would run into Ron, and he would always tell me these crazy stories about these beers that he's seen in brewing logs. And anyone who thinks about beer thinks about history because, you know, most of the good beer for many, many years was in the past, you know? It was history. In this particular instance, we're recreating two exhales from history. Even though you're looking at two completely different beers, this is the same exact beer, the same brand, from the same brewery, separated by 107 years. So the idea is you're going to be tasting history, not just what one beer tasted like, but you're going to be able to see how tastes evolve, wars change, the raw materials. They look different, they taste different, they smell different. Everyone says, you're crazy, they're not the same beer. Well, 107 years can change something.
Well, Ron, can you tell us a little bit about why it's called X-Ale and what the brewery was that originally produced it?
The beers come from the Barclay Perkins Brewery, which is just south of the River Thames. It's a London brewery. For about 30 years in the beginning of the 19th century, they were the largest brewery in London and the largest brewery in the world.
Wow. And they called it X-Ale because?
X is the standard for strong ale. Could just be that X is an easy mark to make. And so breweries would have a range of mild ales, and the weakest one would be X, and the strongest would be 4 or 5X.
So we have the versions that Pretty Things brewed here. We have the 1838 version here in front of us, a bottle of it, and the 1945 version right. of X-Ale. Dan, do you want to crack it open?
Yeah.
And let's have a try. And while Dan is pouring this beer, Ron, can you tell us a little bit about what goes into the 1838 version of X-Ale?
Well, the 1838 one, it's a typical early 19th century beer in that it's very simple. It's got one type of malt and one type of hops, basically, and that's it. Apart from porter and stout, virtually all the beers only have a single type of malt in them.
I've got a cup of it here, and it has actually kind of a nice golden color, not too frothy at the top.
The nose is mostly the hops, which are Kent Goldings. When you recreate beers, you want to try to find beers that were made with raw materials we still have,
right.
because things have changed a lot. So Kent Goldings is sort of a tried and true hop that was available then, is still available now. You do get a bit of sulfur in the nose, which is, I always kind of like it because it reminds you that this is a living beverage, right? And then you're getting a lot of fruity esters in the nose. And with these beers, I think there is even more fruity esters because when you talk about 1838, there's no refrigeration. There's nothing really keeping the temperature down in the fermentation. And some of the stinky elements of old hops get esterized by the yeast. So it goes from smelling like sweat socks to very intense fruity characters, which is a really nice thing that the yeast does for us.
Yeah. Okay, so let's have a try of this.
Okay.
Actually, it's quite delicious.
Yeah. If you looked at it on paper, you would think it was actually quite a bitter beer. There's a lot of hops. I think it's something like $10,000 worth of hops in that beer.
Wow.
There's a pile about 8 feet tall when I stood next to it. It was pretty incredible. Yeah.
And its alcohol content?
I think it's 7.4.
I'm just curious, Ron, were they using water from the Thames?
No.
No.
Barclay Perkins had their own wells that went down deep into the water source, well below the surface level, and they continued to use that until the 20th century when it became contaminated. But in this period, they were using their own well.
Well, the reason why I asked, Ron, is because it wasn't exactly that one could just drink straight out of the Thames River in 1838. Because of that, beer itself served quite a different function in society then than it does today.
Yes. The X ale, that's about the bottom level of beer that there was at the time. But you had stuff that was called table beer, which would be, I don't know, maybe 2.5%, 3% alcohol. And that's the stuff that people drank instead of water and instead of tea. In fact, beer was replaced by tea later on in the 19th century, which really annoyed lots of people. they've considered tea a complete waste of time.
So we just tried the Pretty Things recreation of a Barclay Perkins X Ale that was originally brewed on November 22nd, 1838. Let's fast forward in time, 107 years, as you said, Dan.
Right.
And what do we have here from 1945?
So this is the same beer. You know, it's not gonna look like the same beer, but this is sort of what time did to this particular beer. And you're looking at a 2.8% brown, not very hoppy version of this X-Ale from this brewery.
February 22nd, 1945, the end of the Second World War, Ron.
People often don't realize this, that things actually got worse in Britain after the end of World War II. And so beer strength went down even further after the war ended because there were huge shortages of coal and raw materials and big restrictions on brewing. So breweries were still limited as to how strong they could brew the beer by government legislation. They couldn't get as much of the sugars as they would have used normally. So if you look at the version of the beer brewed before the war, it had no dark malts in it at all. All the colour came from sugar. Whereas this version has a really wide range of materials because they were using what they could get hold of.
So I'm curious, because yeah. I've got them now side by side, the 1838 version and the 1945 version, and just between those two, the 45 version is much darker.
Yeah, that's good-looking beer.
But it's 2.4%?
It's 2.8%. So, yeah.
It sounds like, from what you and Ron are saying, that this is could be nicknamed post-war ration beer because of the limitations that were put on the brewers by virtue of the war and the government in terms of how they could make the beer. Let's give it a try.
All right. Cheers.
That's surprisingly good for being such low alcohol content.
It's pretty incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, you can still make beer at that concentration. It just shows you that you know, beer is a very dynamic beverage. You can take it anywhere, really.
What was it like for you to have to brew these two beers, which are essentially the same beer from two points in history? What was it like for you as a brewer?
One of the things that makes it exciting from our side is there's a lot to go into taking this original brew sheet that's written in the brewer's hand or somebody at the brewery, very loopy sort of handwriting, hard for us to read. There still is this sense that you're going in and you're doing something that somebody did on this particular day because you know what was written. You know a little bit of the history, you know. What were the lives of these people like? They don't sign these brew sheets, which is just a shame. I would love to see the names of the person who made people that made them. So doing this really teaches us a lesson. We call them style-confounding beers from the oh-so-credible past. And I kind of feel that way about them in that we tend to think nowadays in craft beer that we've reinvented beer somehow. We're making things that have never been done. Well, there is a dark past out there, and people were doing all kinds of things, and I think the palates were open to a lot of different flavors way back when, so it's a passion.
Dan Paquette is the co-founder of the Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project in Somerville. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
And beer historian Ron Pattinson, pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you so much for bringing this history back to life for us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure for me, too.